The wedding feast at Cana offers us some very strange things. Like when Jesus is talking to his mother, he says, "Woman, what business is that of ours that the people are running out of wine? Why are you telling me this?" This does not sound like Jesus, does it? It's a little harsh, and it really is harsh, apparently. By most accounts, people are saying, yeah, this is really harsh. He shouldn't be talking to his mother that way. And his reasoning for saying that is, my hour has not yet come. The time for me to pour myself out, his hour, of course, is at the cross. But the direction toward the cross, it feels like he's just not quite ready to start going that direction. And so he says, my hour has not yet come. To which it seems like Mary's response might be, well, no time like the present. Start pouring yourself out. And it seems like Jesus kind of gets, oh, yeah, okay. So he does the thing that his mother asks him to do. Pour yourself out. Pour yourself out. And this is a really interesting thing, because his pouring himself out has to do with filling things up. There's the stone jars for the Jewish rite of purification, it says, right? There's so much about these things that I think is a little bit misunderstood. The first thing is, look, Jesus is not rejecting his Judaism. He's not rejecting his Jewish roots. These are important rites of purification that Jesus knew since he was a kid. If he was trying to reject all that stuff, he would probably have said, take those stone jars and get them out of here. He doesn't do that. He takes out of, I think, deep, deep respect. He takes those things which are part of his heritage, and then he fills them with something new, revitalizing that rite, those rites, that stuff that Judaism has offered over the centuries. So he's revitalizing, not tearing down. And I think Christians, we have to continue to keep that in our minds. Jesus is 100% a beautifully faithful Jew. And so there are these beautiful things about, and they have become dry for sure. And Jesus understands that. And he says, I'm going to revitalize that. And so fill those things up with water. And so they fill them up. And then they dip the wine and they show it to the steward. And the steward of the party says, what's the matter with you people? Don't you know the custom? You're supposed to feed through the good wine first. It's cheaper that way. Get everybody drunk and then you bring in the cheap stuff. But you've brought the best wine out afterwards. There is something new, something that is invigorating by this whole event. Life, joy, rejoicing. The wine had gone out. The wine had gone out. There was no wine. Do you hear that as something that could be connected and reverberating in your own life? I mean, look around us. The joy that God invites us into, the joy for which we were made. The wine is going out. Everybody's getting tired. Everybody's tired of the animosity. Everybody's tired of the masks. Everybody's tired of so many things. Oh, if only there was some joy. And so, this story of Jesus filling these stone jars with wine is about revitalizing our life too. And it has to do also with us pouring ourselves out. And it has to do with us also respecting the traditions and our own history. So, I'm thinking about, this is Martin Luther King weekend, of course. I'm thinking about Martin Luther King Jr. And this connection to this story is, I think, this. When Martin Luther King was just becoming a bit famous, right? And the civil rights movement was moving. He had some options. One of the options he had was to move towards a much more radical, this whole system is broke, let's get rid of it. And there were plenty of folks who were thinking that. But he didn't do that. Like Jesus, he looked and he said, what is the container of this culture? And what's good in it? And how can we revitalize it? And so he instead looked at that old container called the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And he said, I want us all to live up to the things that those documents say. I need them. I want you all to see that they can be revitalized so that there can be really justice and mercy and love and brotherhood and sisterhood in this country where now the wine is going dry. And so he called people forth to look at that old stuff that we thought, well, we kind of had started going through the motions of it, huh, in our country. And there was a whole group of people for whom it didn't really mean anything. And so we are called up and we were asked to look anew at the old vessels. And we did. People did. It took a lot of suffering. It took a lot of people pouring out their life so that the rest of the world, the rest of this country could see what was happening. That the wine was going out. We are continually asked to look anew at the things that we are committed to. To ask ourselves, are we really living in the way that Christ is calling us to? And this story of the wedding feast is a great thing. It is, even if you're not, that's okay. Joy is coming. Jesus is filling those old things with new wine, and we can partake in it. And it's hard to look and say, yeah, no, we continue to have a lot of work to do. And we do. And there's wine at the end of it. There's a huge feast. There's a wedding feast at the end of it. So, can we think of ways in which we can begin to live into that feast now? Whether it's along racial lines, or whether it's along COVID lines, or whether it's around political lines, can we begin to think of ways that we can actually enter into this crazy world, not in animosity, not in dryness, but in joy? Can we begin to say, I will no more talk ill of anyone? No more. That stuff is dry, dry, dry. It's killing me. Oh, I'm speaking autobiographically. Right? It's killing me. It's killing us.
Instead, can we say like Isaiah the prophet, you're no longer desolate. You're no longer going to be out in the wilderness. You are coming home. You are going to be my beloved. And can we think about that for every single person that we meet? God has claimed that person as God's spouse. Can we think about every person we meet as if they were married to Jesus? How would you treat someone who is married to Jesus? With anger and hostility, putting on them our own frustrations? No. But with honor and mercy and joy. And we are asked to begin to pour ourselves out for the sake of others, for the sake of this world.
It might be the end of us, though. It might call us to some very hard things. I'm thinking about another wedding. My sister Michelle got married, and my uncle Joe Riccabini. He was a caterer and a cook, and he had a broken arm, he had a bad leg. He kind of felt like he loved Michelle. He wanted to give her something, so what he gave her was this amazing reception. Down in the basement, the Knights of Columbus Hall, right? And this place was dingy, and he fixed it all up. And he took over the kitchen like a general. And he couldn't do anything because he's got this bad arm and a bad leg, but he's telling everybody he's got all these people working for him, and he's orchestrating the whole thing. It's beautiful. It's so fun to watch, and we're just sitting back. And of course, you don't sit back long because pretty soon Uncle Joe's saying, hey, Paul, go get something. Go get that. Okay. So there it was. So the day of the wedding comes, beautiful wedding. Everybody comes down, and the hors d'oeuvres are out. The hors d'oeuvres, including a 4-foot-tall shrimp tree with shrimp this big, capicola and prosciutto, and all of the cheeses all there with these little pieces of bread for sandwiches. Antipasto, bowls of it. Food like you wouldn't believe. And everybody's like, this is amazing. Whoa, this is great. Well, so they start eating. And eating and eating, and they're like, this is the best food I ever had. This is the best reception I've ever seen. What they didn't know was the real food hadn't come out yet. Because in the kitchen, there was rigatoni, and there was meatballs, and there was sausage. Oh, it was, and there was chopped steak, and there was all of this stuff that was the main dish. And when it came out, everybody said, oh, I thought that was the main dish. No, 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 you hadn't seen nothing yet. And the night went on and on and on. It was this beautiful, beautiful pouring out. And every bit of it was my Uncle Joe pouring himself out. And then, after that, he told us that he had bone cancer, and that that's what the arms and the leg was about. Mm. He knew that this was his last beautiful feast that he could build. And soon after that, he was dying, having poured himself out. I think Jesus had a sense of this too. And maybe this is why he was hesitant to start. He knew that as he was pouring himself out for the world, where it would end. It would end on the cross. It would end in his suffering. And yet, like his mother, I suspect he said, well, no time like the present. Because beyond the suffering, after the suffering, comes this beautiful resurrection. Comes joy and life, real abundant life. It's the pouring out of ourselves that moves us in that direction. It is Jesus beckoning us, come on, come on. There's a feast waiting for you. You won't believe it yet, but there's a feast. And there's wine like you won't believe. There's joy like you won't believe. Come. Come. Don't hang back waiting on the old stuff. Let it be revitalized. Come to the feast, in which you will be so surprised to know you are the bride and Jesus the bridegroom. You are the spouse of Jesus. And everyone around you is too. Let's celebrate that.